From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. We have got a really fun show for you today. We have actor and one-time Obama administration member, now game show host, Cal Penn, will be joining us later. I'll ask him how it feels to finally hit the big time. But first, I want everybody's indulgence. I want to ask our live audience here a little thing. Without me coaching or encouraging you before the show in any way, how exciting is it to see us in person?
Not that exciting.
It is that exciting. And if you out there in Radio Land would like to see what's gotten these completely uncoached people so excited, then come to our live cinecast next week. We'll be broadcasting our show live via satellite into a movie theater near you. You'll see our special guest Steve Martin, musical guests Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, panelists Mo Rocca, Tom Baudet, and Paula Poundstone, and all the things in our extended show that the FCC won't let us broadcast on the radio. For tickets, go to waitwaittickets.org. First, it's your chance to play one last time without knowing what we look like. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Now it's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Nick Selby. I'm a transplanted New Yorker in Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, hey, Nick. How are you?
Great, thank you.
How hard has it been to sort of translate your New York sensibility to Texas?
The pizza's really bad.
Yeah, that's a problem. I hope it makes up for it in other ways.
The barbecue's really good.
There you go. Well, Nick, let me introduce you to our panel. First up, it's the syndicated advice columnist for the Chicago Tribune. The column is Ask Amy. Amy Dickinson is here.
Hey, Nick.
Next, it's a comedian who'll be performing at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York this weekend, Mr. Maz Joe Brani.
Hello, Nick.
And finally, it's a humorist and author most recently of Alphabetter Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt Jr. is here.
Hey, Nick.
Nick, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home answering machine. You ready to play?
Yes, sir.
All right. Here is your first quote.
This is our bleeping city. Stay strong.
That was baseball player David Ortiz speaking for just about everybody after a rough week in what bleeping city?
Boston.
Yes, indeed. Boston, Massachusetts. Things are finally getting back to normal in Boston. They let people out of their homes, they opened the streets, and the people started driving down them like lunatics. Everybody said, wow, those terrorists picked the wrong city to attack, mainly because nobody in Boston can pronounce a word with as many R's as Terra.
I think it's interesting that ballplayers have started going ahead and saying curses in their public...
Well, this is what happened. That was actually an interesting moment. They had this big ceremony before the first Red Sox game after the attacks, right? And David Ortiz, you know, the star player for the Sox, that was his first day back, and so they gave him the microphone. And that's what he said. He just said to the, you know, 40,000 people plus live television audience. And the head of the FCC himself tweeted, hey, David's being David. It's okay with me. When your city gets bombed, you get a total dispensation to drop F-bombs on TV. It's like, bomb gives you one F-bomb. That's how it works.
But just imagine Lou Gehrig. Tonight, I feel like the luckiest bleeping guy on earth.
Yeah, there's a
that
lot of
speeches.
That would
have been pretty awesome, actually.
But it rhymes.
Now that
you
think of it.
Yeah, like, you know, like, ask not what your bleeping country could do for you.
Yeah.
But what you could do for your bleeping country.
Yeah.
Right.
Step up.
Now, what happened, of course, was at the end of last week when these guys were caught who did the bombing, we found out they were Chechens. And people, you know, took to Twitter to denounce these dastardly Czechs, as in Czech Republic. And the Czech embassy in the U.S., this is true, had to put out a statement saying, hello, Americans.
Hello.
We are not Chechens. We are Czechs. The Czech Republic, you know, known for Václav Havel, Czech mix, that sort of stuff. Totally different thing. A little bit of confusion. We got it straightened out. This led to the House introducing the Terrorists Must Be Places We've Heard Of Act of 2013.
I got to tell you, Peter, as a Middle Eastern male, yes. I know that the whole Middle Eastern community was watching going, please don't be Middle Eastern. Please
yeah.
don't be.
Yeah, you totally won that lottery, man.
What, and then it came out. They were Chechen. We're like, yes. And then the next day they said, but they're Muslim. I was like, damn it.
No.
What I want to know, again, as a Middle Eastern male, is anytime something like this happens, white people start sending out ricin. Why is that? Like, do they have... Is it ready to go?
Like, yeah, we're all set.
Stamp is there.
Pre-addressed stamped envelopes.
Pre-addressed. It's a
what's
hey,
right,
man,
that's a
you do it your
thing.
Way, we'll we do it our way, okay? I don't get in your face about your game, you know? All right. Your next quote is from a man widely and publicly accused and then cleared of attempting to poison someone with ricin.
I thought they said rice. I don't even eat rice.
So that man had been wrongfully accused of sending a ricin-laced letter to whom?
President Obama.
Indeed, yes. This is what happened. While we were all paying attention to the bombing and the chase in Boston, last week the FBI arrested an Elvis impersonating conspiracy theorist and martial artist named Kevin Curtis in Mississippi in the charge of sending letters to President Obama, other officials with his poison, ricin. This week they let him go because it turns out he might have been framed by another martial artist slash musician slash conspiracy theorist jealous of Kevin's success as an Elvis impersonator. I need to point out at this juncture, I have not yet made anything up. Now, Kevin, the Elvis guy, upon his release, gave the best press conference ever in which he talked about his dog, Moo Cow, how he's been to jail 20 times but never been convicted of anything. And then he told the national media that in addition to everything else, he was also a licensed foot massager and he offered free foot massages to all the ladies. Still have not made anything up.
And didn't all this like go down in Tupelo, Mississippi?
Yes,
like
it all
how
happened
big
in Tupelo.
Is Tupelo? Like it's
well,
not a very
apparently
big...
it's not big enough to hold these two guns. Because what happened was is the FBI descended on this guy because there are clues in the letters as to who he was, and they didn't find anything in his house that could help him make ricin, which is difficult to manufacture. So we should have known it wasn't the Elvis impersonator, because whenever a guy does this, the neighbors always say, oh, he was so quiet, we never imagined. It's never like, oh yeah, that guy, he's a lunatic. He's an Elvis impersonating martial artist conspiracy theorist. Of course it's him. That never happens. Your last quote, Nick, is from Bill Clinton.
Your mother showed me some of your landscapes and animal paintings, and I think they're wonderful.
President Clinton was praising another man for his animal paintings at the opening of his presidential library. Who was it?
No, it'd be George W. Bush.
Yes, indeed. All five presidents, current and former, were there for the opening of the Bush Library. George W. Bush himself got up and said, I was always known as somebody who was less likely to be found in a library than to actually found one, said Mr. Bush of himself. So all this sudden nostalgia for President Bush has led to some discussion in the media over whether his brother Jeb might run for president next. But their mother, Barbara, said no, saying, quote, we've had enough Bushes, unquote. Asked to clarify later, a spokesman for the family came out, firmly put his hand over her mouth and said she was just talking about the landscaping at the library.
It was like, oh boy.
I've been to the Clinton Library, and one thing it has in it is a framed letter from Dom DeLuise.
Really? Of all people, Dom DeLuise.
If I got a letter from Dom DeLuise, I wouldn't frame it.
But, yeah. Nothing against the late Mr. DeLuise, but still.
No, nothing against him. But if you're a president and you have a library, surely. I don't know. Maybe Lincoln would have done it the same.
They should.
I can't imagine Thomas Jefferson, for instance, framing a letter from Dom DeLuise.
No.
Hanging it up.
Carl, how did Nick do in our quiz?
Nick, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, sir. Thanks so much for playing, Nick.
Thanks so much.
We want to remind everybody to join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And for tickets and more information for Thursday's Cinecast event in a movie theater near you, go to waitwaittickets.org. Right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Maz, 3 men have been deported from Saudi Arabia for the offense of being what?
Oh, yeah. I heard about this. They were too good looking.
That's exactly right. Mm. They were too handsome. In a blow to its horrible sexism toward women, Saudi Arabia this week started being horribly sexist toward men. Anyway, authorities say they deported these visitors because they were afraid they were so handsome, normally modest Saudi women would lose all their modesty and throw themselves at them. Nothing bad happened, of course. These men were not given the chance to bewitch Saudi women. Mm. However, one woman did rush up to the man and tried to do something completely unacceptable in that society, drive their car.
You know, the thing, though, I'm sorry, I have an opinion. The thing on this is, these guys, as soon as they landed in Dubai or wherever they're from, that, what a pickup line.
I know. They will never buy a drink again. It's just...
I am so hot that they kicked me out of a country.
Yes.
What?
I'm that hot. Come to my house now. That's a pickup line.
And so now it's like a whole thing, like, oh, you're handsome enough to be deported. It's like a whole new...
You are so good looking that if I were the Saudi government, I'd deport you.
That's
like
a line.
That's what I'm saying. These guys have got, like, player status now back home.
Yeah.
They kicked me out of a... Brad Pitt didn't get kicked out of the car. I got kicked out.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson, and Maz Jobrani. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ryan Chin from Sacramento, California.
Hey, Ryan Chin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
What do you do in Sacramento?
Well, I actually work for Stanford University.
And did they tell you, oh yeah, our officers are in Sacramento, that's where we are, go there.
So I make the commute down to campus when I need to, and otherwise they let me work from home.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
It's really great.
So you get to spend time with your family?
No.
No. You're at home, you lock the door, you don't let them in.
No, I get to work.
That's I see. Well, welcome to the show, Ryan. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction, of course. Carl, what is Ryan's topic?
I hate you. I hate you. You're not my real parents.
Family creates all sorts of problems, which is why someone has developed a product to help you deal with your nearest and dearest. Guess the real product, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail, whatever you've got there. Ready to go?
Yes, I am.
All right, first let's hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Says Einar Magnusson of Reykjavik, everyone in Iceland has heard the story. You're at a family reunion, and that girl looks familiar. Is she? Indeed, she is. Someone you hooked up with some time ago. Maybe in Hollywood it's a cute premise, but in real Icelandic life, it's not a good feeling when you realize that girl is your cousin. The problem is most Icelanders are at least distantly related because they share descent from a party of 9th century Vikings. The solution? The smartphone anti-incest alarm. A widely available database traces Icelandic family lines back several centuries. It's called the Icelendingabók, or as we might put it back home, Mama and Them. Now that database has given rise to an app whose slogan is, bump the app before you bump in bed. Potential Icelandic couples, if they both have the app, can bump their phones together and the alarm either goes, uh-uh, in effect, or it doesn't. Doubt it's reliable? Test it on your sister.
An app in Iceland that helps you find out if you're related to somebody before you go out with them. Okay, your next story about a new way to deal with annoying relatives comes from Amy Dickinson.
Is your dad's chili con carne recipe being investigated by the FBI as a weapon of mass digestion? Could your Aunt Shelley's cheesy, pleasy meatloaf pass as a breeding plantation for a new class of antibiotics? Have you ever gone to a family dinner and left by way of the emergency room? Clara Gallagher had this problem. After her grandmother made her eat a dish called veal pucklets, the Utica, New York native invented the Body Buddy, a series of specially shaped containers which sensitive-stomached diners can use to spirit out unwanted and uneaten entrees from family meals. Her specially designed Tupperware-style container fits snugly into a bedazzled evening bag, mm-hmm. allowing her to smuggle food in and out. A 12-ounce flask strapped to the inside of the leg comes in handy during eggnog season. The inventor says, "My cousin Bobby caught me shoveling away at our Aunt Carol's three-cheese Rice Krispie treats, and he asked me for one. So now it comes in camouflage for the guys. This isn't about nutrition. It's about preserving family relationships and stomach linings."
Tupperware designed to allow you to smuggle food off of your plate at bad family gatherings and to the garbage. Your last solution to managing a family crisis comes from Maz Jobrani.
"Most parents will tell you that kids are one of the best things in life. They will also tell you that kids are the worst thing for your love life. That's what inspired former Special Ops Commander Mike D'Elia to start a service called Make Love, Not War. Under this service, former military special ops soldiers come to your house and do whatever it takes to give you and your spouse time to make love. Whether it's putting the kids down for a nap, challenging your teenager to a game of one-on-one basketball, or using tranquilizer darts, these soldiers will keep the kids busy while you're in the trenches. D'Elia uses standard decoy techniques learned in the military to keep the kids at bay while the parents play. Dealing with a baby is the easiest. They're so dumb you can trick them with a baby rattle. One time I just shook the rattle for 10 minutes till the parents were done and the mission was accomplished." Jenny Tripoli, mother of five, who used Make Love, Not War, says it saved her marriage. "My husband and I were so stretched for time with the kids that our marriage was on the brink. I thought these guys were heroes before, but now I can't live without them. We live by Mike's motto. Making love is like being in the special forces. You got to be ready to go anytime, any place."
All right. I don't know what kind of Ryan, I don't know what kind of family problems you might have, but one of these things is a real technique to help you with them. From Roy Blunt Jr., an app that people in Iceland are using to find out if they're related to the person they want to date. From Amy Dickinson, specially designed concealable Tupperware to smuggle food out of bad meals, or presumably better food in if you want to. Or from Maz Jobrani, a team of Navy SEALs who make sure that you and your loved one get some private time, no matter what the kids might want to do. Which of these is the real score?
Honestly, knowing where I work and what we've seen, there is an app for everything at this point. So I'm going to go with Roy.
You're going to go with Roy's story about the app in Iceland that helps people find out quickly if they're related to somebody. All right. Well, to bring you the real answer, we spoke to somebody who was involved with that answer.
If you're an Icelander, you can trace your family centuries back in time. This app was made to prevent you from sleeping with your cousin.
Pretty direct. That was Dr. Kari Stefansson, CEO of Decode Genetics, one of the creators of the Iceland Accidental Incest app. Congratulations, Ryan. You got it right. Yay!
All right.
You earned a point for Roy. You've won our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Well done, sir.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for playing with us today.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
She's as cute as she can be. She's a distant cousin, but she's not too distant with me.
We kiss
all night.
I squeeze
is her tight. But we're kissing cousins. That's what makes it all right.
And now the game where people who have done interesting things get asked about things that simply do not interest them. Cal Penn has a really unusual resume. As an actor, he starred in the most successful series of stoner movies made in the last decade, the Harold and Kumar films. And he's also served as the Obama White House liaison to youth. Now he's hosting a new show, The Big Brain Theory. He joins us now. Cal Penn, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So you've done all these things, but would I be right in saying most people know you from the Harold and Kumar movies?
That's probably true. When I walk outside of my house, that's probably the largest shouts that I get.
There's a crowd outside going, Oh, Kumar! Really?
Stoners tend to be very happy, so yes. you do get a lot of high fives walking down the street, which is very nice.
So these are movies about two guys who really like to smoke marijuana and their quest for marijuana to smoke and to get a hamburger. Is that about
exactly.
right?
That's pretty much it. It's a very simple concept.
Right. And describe, please, sir, your research.
my research is funny. There's a scene in the first movie, and it takes place at a hospital in New Jersey where my character performs gunshot surgery. And I kid you not, I had the chance to spend 2.5 days at the UCLA Medical Center Library researching gunshots because I knew that despite the stoner element to this, this is a guy who, no matter how much weed he smokes, can apparently somehow still perform gunshot surgery at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So there actually was an odd amount of sort of serious research that went into a role like this.
That's not what I was asking about. In fact, you know what I was asking about.
Man, everyone's always disappointed to find out that I don't smoke weed in real life.
Really? I understand that. But that's hard to do. I mean, how can you're playing a guy who is stoned a lot. How can you play stoned if you've never been stoned?
Well, I have a lot of friends who get stoned a lot. You just watch them.
All right. So I want you to break this down. I'm actually kind of interested. What do you do? I think I can say this along with your partner in these films, the nation's preeminent stoned actor. How do you replicate the experience of being stoned as an actor? What do you do?
There were a couple of things, actually. You know, you don't drink a lot of water, so your mouth is constantly dry. Mm-hmm. There's something called a menthol blower that some actors use to cry. I actually liked it because it gives your eyes a really glassy look, and yeah. it also dries them out a lot.
Yeah.
So you really, between not drinking water and having your eyes legitimately dry, I would say that's just in terms of physically feeling things that you feel, that's probably, you know, 50% of it. And then the other 50% is just kind of really wild, spending time and watching people who are blitzed out of their skulls.
Right.
And asking them a ton of questions about what they're feeling right now. But it's probably actually a horrible thing to do to somebody who's high to get them that paranoid. What are you feeling? What are you feeling right now? What are you feeling right now? But it was a fun exercise.
Right. Now, what makes you interesting is you've had a career as an actor. In addition to those films, you were on a season of House. You've done a lot of different things. You're in 24. And then, I guess it was now 4 years ago, you walked away from it, and you went to Washington to join the Obama administration. How in the world did that happen?
It was actually, you know, back in 2007, there was a writer's strike in Hollywood, so none of us could work on anything, and I had read up a lot about then Senator Obama, and you know he was down 30 points in the polls in Iowa and the Iowa caucuses, and so I went to Iowa for 3 days to volunteer for him, and ended up staying for the next 2.5 months leading up to the Iowa caucuses, and then ended up working on his youth outreach team and worked on arts outreach quite a bit. When he took office, there was an opening on his outreach team, and so at that point, you know, do you say no? Sorry, sir, I have another stoner movie to make. No, you.
Well, Jimmy, that's the crazy thing was the fact that you played a stoner in these very successful stoner movies. As far as the Obama White House concerned, a plus or a minus?
I don't think it was either.
So, did you and the president turn on?
I never figured out the right time to say, sir.
Yeah, really.
Is it between the Osama bin Laden meeting and the Economic Council meeting?
I don't know. Wendy, you remember standing there with him and he looked at you and said, you know, I found your depiction of a stoned guy good, but not convincing. Let me give you some pointers, said the president.
Right.
Didn't happen?
No awesome stories like that.
You know, we all know, yes, people leave their jobs in law or whatever else they're doing to come work for an administration they believe in. Fine. But you left a successful career in Hollywood, which seems to the rest of America nuts. Why would anybody want to do that? Why would you, if you're a successful actor, why would you want to do something less influential, like work in the actual government? So what was it like culturally to go from Hollywood and that culture of the entertainment business to, you know, the West Wing or the executive office building, wherever you were?
It was definitely different. I mean, the thing that kind of, you know, drew me to it in a sense is that, look, I love making people laugh. That's one of the reasons I love these ridiculous movies that we get to do. And it was, at the same time, inspirational to see all of these young people and the president and the staff, all of these folks out in these different communities, really pushing for and then achieving a lot that they had asked for. And so I actually walked away from that experience feeling really fired up and really humbled by this awesome experience that really anything is possible. And we've
yeah, great. Weren't you ever frustrated there was no craft services table in the executive office building? Where you're like, they want me to pay for snacks? What do you mean here?
Nobody brought me my green M&Ms, man.
I mean, I know.
Where, you know?
Cal, I have to ask, you've been in all these movies, these TV shows, the White House. I have to ask, don't you agree that game show host is, in fact, the pinnacle of human achievement?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, Cal Penn, we're delighted to have you with us, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Get it off me!
You might be surprised to learn that you're not alone in your body. There's a whole colony of bacteria and other critters called a microbiome living on and in you. We're going to ask you three questions about all our little friends. Get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Cal Penn playing for?
Cal is playing for Kelly Cronley of Somerville, Massachusetts.
You ready to play? Here.
I am, and I have a feeling that this is going to result in me buying one of those bubbles that I never want to leave.
It could be. Here's your first question. The colony of organisms on and inside you, your body, help you out in many ways, but they hurt us all in one specific way. What is it? A, they make us weigh 3 pounds more than we really do. B, they cause us to repulse people who have different kinds of bacteria, no matter how attractive we might find them. Or C, they give us wedgies.
Life experience tells me that it's B, but it's probably really A, so I'm going to go with A.
It is, in fact, A. Next time you weigh yourself, subtract 3 pounds from your weight, because that's just all your bacteria. That's 3 pounds we have, all of us,
that's
about.
A lot of bacteria.
All right, next question. Some scientists wanted to see if people could transfer their organisms on them to another person by brushing up against them. So they went and scientifically studied what? A, the crowds at Lollapalooza, B, participants in a roller derby, or C, creepy guys in elevators?
B, roller derby.
You're right. Very good.
Right.
They went, they studied the biota on the arms of roller derby participants, had them do the roller derby where they rub up against each other, tested them again. It turns out they sort of swapped critters as they rubbed and rubbed.
Cooties.
Cooties. That's the technical term, is cooties. You're doing very well, Cal. There you are. All right. Last question. Go for perfect. There are lots of different kinds of creatures living inside us, but very few people get the honor of having one of these named after them. An intestinal parasite found only in the lesser guitarfish was named after whom? A, lesser guitar legend Eddie Van Halen. That's not, he's a good guitar player. I'm sorry for that. B, Lindsay Lohan. Or C, famed public radio producer Doug Berman.
Oh, man. I'm really hoping it's B, but I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C? Doug Berman?
Yes.
You would be right. Doug Berman, the creator of Car Talk and this very show, was honored to have the parasite Echinobothrium Doug Bermani named for him in honor of his recent 70th birthday.
That,
isn't that
is
cool?
So cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also, by the way, now talk show host is no longer the pinnacle of a career.
There you are. You can go on to be an actual parasite. Carl, how did Cal Penn do in our show?
Cal had 3 correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Kelly Cronley. Congratulations.
Well done. Congratulations. Cal Penn is the host of the new Discovery Channel series, The Big Brain Theory. Cal Penn, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to see you.
Thank you guys so much. Good to
thank
talk
you.
To you.
Thanks
for having me on.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Maz Jobrani, Roy Blunt Jr., and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl checks the rhyme in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Moz, the life of a politician is not easy, especially in the United Kingdom. According to a new report, Britain's House of Commons has paid out a large sum of money to a man injured when he did what?
A man injured when he did what? The House of Commons paid
him? Yes. It's a rather British thing to do.
Rather British thing to do? When he held an umbrella.
Yes! He did! It
really?
Happened with an umbrella. He tripped over it.
Are you serious?
He tripped over an umbrella. The British spend so much time concentrating on talking with an English accent, it's hard, that they don't pay attention to where they're going, and this guy tripped over an umbrella and got $200 for the damages. Parliamentary employees have been paid tens of thousands of dollars in workman's comp for personal injuries and property damage. Among the injuries, $435 for five ripped suit jackets, $240 for damage to glasses due to a problem with a door, $90 for trousers ripped whilst connecting IT equipment under the table. Taxpayers were furious when these charges were revealed to the public. And when called for comment, a House of Commons spokesperson chipped his tooth on the phone and burst into flames.
These guys have done such a great job with their stereotype that you said very British and I said held an umbrella.
There you go.
Crazy.
It's tough to do. It takes centuries. Mm-hmm. Maz, a company in Utrecht, knows that finding your soulmate seems impossible. Thankfully, there's a service that will provide you with a boyfriend that is what?
This company in the Netherlands knows that finding your soulmate is impossible.
They want to solve that problem for all those people, men and women, who are looking for the perfect boyfriend.
For the perfect boyfriend.
And they've got it covered. This boyfriend is what?
Is fake.
It is fake.
That's
it's
how he's
fake
perfect.
Boyfriend.
Yes. All you need is a true desire in your heart, an openness to love, some yarn and some needles.
Oh, this is a embroidered...
Embroidered?
No, you know. You know what I'm saying.
You gotta brush up on your needlework.
I know.
Knitted boyfriend.
Knitted boyfriend.
The world's first knitted boyfriend. Are you the kind of person who wants companionship but doesn't want to deal with the hassle of your companion having a mouth, heart, or brain? Let me introduce you to My Knitted Boyfriend. Individually made in the Netherlands, My Knitted Boyfriend is the perfect man, so long as your two markers for perfection are made out of cotton and can keep the crows out of your cornfield.
That just shows you what pigs men are. Men create this sex doll, and women just want this
yeah,
knitted
I mean,
thing.
It's great. It's such a great boyfriend. It lets you watch your TV shows without complaining.
Yeah.
It cuddles all night, and you can put hot dishes on it. It's fine. Amy, single guys are getting some valuable new dating advice thanks to a new study. Women, according to this study, think men are more attractive if they do what?
Is it a grooming?
No.
Is it a, oh. More attractive. Laugh.
No.
Oh.
I'll give you a hint.
Ooh.
Amy, women think men are more attractive if
they
do what?
You're doing it now.
I was attempting. Mm. Did you find me more attractive?
I did.
And what was I doing?
It was like you were talking in a monotone.
Exactly. Speaking in a monotone
really?
Apparently
and
makes
you know
men
what?
More attractive.
It really kind of worked.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You feel something?
I did.
A flutter
I did.
In your tummy?
I felt something.
Yeah. This is from the journal Archives of Sexual Behavior. According to this, men who speak in a monotone are sexier. It's either because we associate monotone with authority. Come with me if you want to live, you know. Or because women who hear monotone voices think, boy, he's boring, and yet clearly his parents reproduce, so there must be something in the genetic line that he's got going for him. Now we wanted to test this theory. So ladies in particular, but not exclusively, you know, huddle up close to your radio, and we listen to Carl do his sexy monotone.
You had me at hello.
That was exciting. That was exciting. See what I mean?
That's not as much monotone as like reading one of, like for kids.
No, no.
That was kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
That's like Carl, like if Carl ever were a computer voice.
Yeah.
I had you at
hello.
Hello.
But we thought of it as like, if you think about it, you know, you get that sort of Don Draper, right? Versus Don Knotts.
Mm.
You know, no one wants, I wish I knew how to quit you.
But what if it's a high-pitched monotone? I wish I knew how to quit you.
Too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. And hey, would you want to see Wait Wait live if all you had to do was to go to your local movie theater? For information on our special Cinecast event happening May 2nd, that's Thursday, go to waitwaittickets.org. You can see me and Carl, along with special guest Steve Martin, and music from Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Tori calling from Chicago.
Hey, Tori, how are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
That's it. That's what I want to hear. You're not good. You're awesome. Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm in Evanston right now.
Oh! Northern suburb of Chicago. What do you do there?
I am a graduate student in the English department at Northwestern.
Wow! You are going to get a doctorate in English?
No, a master's. Because it's
even better.
It's much cooler.
Because speaking as an English major myself, a master's in English opens all kinds of doors. You basically can write your own ticket.
Don't worry. I already have a job.
What is your job?
I'm a web developer.
No problem then. You can do something useful with yourself. Well, welcome to the show, Tori.
Thank you.
Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, then two of these limericks will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I hope so.
Here's your first limerick.
Okay.
As I hit the deck after my breakup, I'm decked out and I hope you guys wake up. I only regret that I don't break a sweat. I work out less when I'm wearing
makeup.
Yes, indeed. Very good. You know those ladies you see at the gym wearing full makeup? Of course you don't. You haven't been to the gym in months. But they're there, and according to a new British study, they're not burning many calories, the idea being they're just there to show off. Really, though, if you're like me, the big problem with makeup at the gym is your mascara runs because exercise makes you cry. Here's your next limerick.
About bathrooms at work, we are bitching, but our outrage we soon will be switching. Everyone squirms at the microwave's germs. The filthiest place is the
kitchen.
Yes, indeed. You're very good. I would expect a person pursuing a master's in English to be adept at poetry. In good news for makers of hand sanitizer and bad news for everyone else, a new study finds way more bacteria in office kitchens than office bathrooms. Experts suggest you wash your hands before and after making coffee, wipe down counters after use, and avoid the water cooler. So when you want to chat with your coworkers, just gather around the urinal. It's safer.
You know what the problem is the bathroom we know is dirty, so someone always goes in and cleans it. Ooh. Kitchen, you just leave. Everyone leaves stuff.
True.
I'm always finding stuff in the back of the fridge. Always in the back.
Yeah.
Hiding, just getting bacteria upped. You know what I'm saying? What's the verb for increasing your bacteria? Bacteriaing?
You're accumulating?
Accumulating bacteria.
I guess.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
You an English major?
I was.
Came in handy.
Here is your last limerick.
A buff body can be like a pox. People think that my mind's filled with rocks. They assume skill at sports makes me speak in gruff snorts. There's a stereotype against
jocks.
Yes, indeed, jocks. One group has been the victim of discrimination for too long, jocks. This is according to a study from Michigan State University. People keep telling dumb jocks they're dumb so they don't apply themselves, and the cycle of failure continues. What jocks need is their own It Gets Better project. How about the It Doesn't Really Get Better, but You're Having a Lot of Sex Right Now, So Maybe Don't Complain project?
You know who they say is really smart is Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, apparently he is, they say.
But who's saying that? Stupid people. So
other dumb jocks.
Other dumb jocks.
No, I've known some jocks who were
had teams. Chris Paul on the show.
Chris Paul, very smart man.
There's Ryan Lochte.
Yeah, he helps. Carl, how did Tori do in our quiz?
Tori, congratulations. You had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thanks a lot, Tori.
Thank you.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Maz Jobrani and Amy Dickinson have 3 points each.
Really?
Roy Blunt Jr. has two.
Mm. Wow. Okay, Roy, you are in third place, so you are up first. Fill in the blank. On Monday, two men accused of planning a terror attack involving a train to New York were arrested by officials in blank.
I was so preoccupied with other terror attacks. Boston.
In Canada. Oh. Stocks nosedived briefly Tuesday after hackers posted a message on the AP's Twitter feed saying that the blank had been attacked.
White House.
Yes. On Thursday, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said the U.S. had evidence that chemical weapons have been used in blank.
Syria.
Right. The Koch brothers announced this week that to spread the conservative message, they're considering buying the blank company.
Tribune.
Yes. A woman attending a circus in Florida was surprised when she went to the restroom and blanked.
Found people juggling in there.
No. She found a tiger inside.
Oh, my goodness.
It had escaped. The American folk singer who opened at Woodstock blank died this week at age 72.
Richie Havens.
Right. After she was arrested for disorderly conduct while asking police, "Do you know my name?" Actress blank has apologized.
Reese Witherspoon.
That's exactly right. Anchorman A.J. Clemente made his television debut on KFRY in North Dakota this week, and his very first words on air were blank. That's right. That's what he said.
Hilarious.
A.J. Clemente's first broadcast began before he knew it had begun, when the camera caught him looking at his notes and swearing like a sailor. Then he looked up, realized he was on camera, and mumbled about the East Coast, where he's from. After the broadcast, Clemente tweeted, "Well, that couldn't have gone any worse." He was then fired. Carl, how did Roy do on our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Roy has taken the lead.
All right. Woo! Thank you, Carl. We flipped the coin. Amy has elected to go second. Here we go. Amy, you're up next. The TSA announced this week that it is delaying a plan to allow people to bring small blank onto airplanes.
Knives? No.
Well, knives.
Oh.
Exactly 1 week after the attack, President Obama led a moment of silence for the victims of the bombing at the blank.
Boston Marathon.
Right. Heavy rain this week led to even more blanking in the Midwest states.
A flooding.
Right. The Boy Scouts drew criticism after announcing that they will now allow blank scouts, but not blank leaders.
Gay.
Yes. Police in New Zealand tracked a man who allegedly stole a pack of gummy bears by blanking.
Following the trail of gummy bears.
Exactly right.
No.
Alan Arbus, best known. Alan Arbus, best known for his role as Dr. Sidney Friedman in the Korean War sitcom Blank, died this week at age 95.
MASH.
Right. Mike Tyson started following soccer player Luis Suarez on Twitter after Suarez blanked an opponent during a game.
Bit his ear?
Yes, indeed. Bus drivers in France are fed up and threatening to strike because blank.
Bus drivers in France threatening strike because they can't bring their baguette. No. It involves...
They're threatening to strike in Marseille because they say their uniform pants are too tight. "We reject the bottom half of this uniform," said a union representative while desperately sucking his gut in. "The pants are far too tight. The new skin-tight pants aren't the only problem either. The bus drivers are also unhappy with the 2-drink minimum and the new requirement that they collect bus fares in their waistbands." Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 17 points, and Amy has taken the lead.
Well done.
Wow.
So then how many does Maz need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Okay, Maz, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. 2 years after a tweet caused him to leave office in disgrace, blank opened a new Twitter account.
Wiener.
Yes. Court officials in Honolulu prevented a man from smuggling blank into his felony court hearings.
Fruit?
No. 240s and a duck. People magazine drew some criticism this week for naming blank as the world's most beautiful woman.
Gwyneth Paltrow?
Right. With sales of the song Sweet Caroline up 597% this week, blank announced he would donate the royalties to victims of the Boston bombing.
The guy. Diamond.
Neil Diamond. Art lovers in Louisiana are paying top dollar for paintings created by artist Winkelheimer Smith, a blank.
Winkelheimer Smith, a blank?
Is a blank.
Winkelheimer Smith is a hot dog.
Winkelheimer Smith is a disabled squirrel. Just 2 years ago, Winkelheimer Smith narrowly escaped being eaten by a cat, but was nursed back to health by a kindly woman who taught her to hold a paintbrush in her mouth. Now, Winkelheimer's paintings are selling on eBay, and Daniel Day-Lewis has been cast in the role of the squirrel in the film adaptation to be called My Left Paw. Carl, did Maz do well enough to win?
He needed at least 7 points to tie, but he had just 3 points.
Oh, goodness.
So, with 17 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion.
Well done. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict what will be the big exhibit at the Obama Presidential Library someday. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels. In downtown Chicago, booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 450 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. And Arizona State University, more than 60 undergraduate and graduate online degree programs at radio.asu.edu. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, benevolent overlord, and namesake of a parasite. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our intern is Miles Dorn Undercover Boss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Larchuk and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillag, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what exhibit is going to make headlines at the Obama Presidential Library someday? Mr. Maz Jobrani.
Well, obviously, a copy of his Kenyan birth certificate with the caption, ha-ha.
Amy Dickinson.
Well, you know how President Obama is probably our most buff president? Now we're going to know how he got that way. It's the presidential abdominator.
And Roy Blunt Jr.
The dazzling, beautifully designed, and yet rather poignant hall of how it should have been.
Well, if any of those exhibits appear, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Roy Blunt Jr., Amy Dickinson, Maz Jobrani. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you, and some of you will see us, next week. This is NPR.